Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
He has been somebody that I've been leaning on tremendously. Just his mental game and taking care of himself mentally is at such a high level that that's been something that I've worked on for a while now. So just asking him questions on how he stays strong mentally. And, you know, this game is 99% mental, you know, so you got to have that right in order to go out there and perform physically. So I've been leaning on him heavy, and obviously he's a baller as well. And same with Palm, bigger dude, baller as well, physical when he plays, great dude all around. So that whole receive room every single year is just great dudes gelling together to go out there and make plays for each other.
Buffalo Bills wide receiver Khalil Shakir talking about, well, wide receiver room. Guys gelling, working together. They're continuing that everyone eats mantra. We'll see if it has even better success this year. It will be hard in terms of points per game. They did score 30 points per game last year,
right,
but they absolutely could be more efficient. They could absolutely be one of the more strong aspects of this team because there were points last year, including the AFC Championship game, where guys just were not able to get open quick enough. I think that's where you add a guy like a Josh Palmer, who sort of his calling card is that he gets open, and he gets open quickly. It does sound like him and Josh Allen's chemistry continues to build over at St. John Fisher. Speaking of training camp, Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes during Bills training camp with Sal's All Access Facebook Live on WGR's Facebook page, driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We'll step a little bit aside from Bills practice. We'll keep you posted on anything that is going on there. But I did want to jump in around kind of the NFL and just some of the other storylines that have been going on. We've already mentioned stuff like Kyrie Elam getting a pick and having a fun celebration. That was kind of cool to see. But staying with Cowboys camp as well.
Yeah.
Man, the Joneses, which hurts me to say as a fellow Jones. Both Jerry and Steven, and I've heard that stuff, you know, being a Texas fan and having, you know, following Texas reporters who ultimately also kind of dabble in the Dallas Cowboys, the rumblings there have been that the team actually won't change all that much when Steven eventually takes over for Jerry. And
right,
whether that be at Jerry's passing or, you know, years before that, everything I've heard is that Steven is a lot like his dad. And that very much showed when talking about Micah Parsons.
People also like tend to gravitate toward the one time where he was like, no, don't take Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that, though? Like, we need to remember, people, it's one incident from...
Well, I'm fairly certain the player that they did actually take retired this year. Yeah, Zach Martin.
But that was, it was a good pick, but it was also how long
it's
ago?
So long ago that the guy had a 10-year career and retired.
Yeah.
It's been a bit.
We can deal with the fact of like, okay, he saved his father from doing one bad thing, but it doesn't seem like that he's just like the antithesis of his father. No. This is going to look more like, well, apple tree didn't fall far. And again, your comments with or you mentioning their comments about the Micah Parsons saga at Cowboys camp of, it was so goofy. To hear, oh my God, it was, he's got to want to be paid too.
Yeah, we want to pay him. And this is coming off of fans chanting, pay Micah at camp. He spoke with the media saying, well, we want to pay him, but Parsons has to want to get paid too. And this also comes off of from a few months ago. Jerry Jones was basically boxing out Parsons' agent. So Parsons wouldn't actually sign the contract, even though Jerry's saying, well, it's going to be the biggest contract a non-quarterback has ever signed. It's just like there's two pass rusher dilemmas going on right now. There's two battles going on. You got the Bengals with Trey Hendrickson. You have the Cowboys now with Micah Parsons. The Cowboys have never had the problem of actually paying people. They will, in fact, do it. Their problem is they wait so long, they're paying more money than they needed to.
It costs more money for them to do things because they are not as proactive in getting deals done. And here is the latest example of, yeah, sure, paying Micah Parsons. It's a no-brainer. It's just, I mean, what's taking so long? And
yeah,
in the interim, you had, for non-quarterbacks, you had Ja'Marr Chase, Myles Garrett, and now T.J. Watt all jump in front of you, two of which are at your position.
Mm-hmm.
Or not position, but like...
You're all being paid in the same
group. Your impact.
Yeah.
And your style of play. He is listed linebacker. He does rush the passer. It's just... Yeah, now it's costing more, though. You had two edge rushers that also got paid the biggest contract for a non-quarterback. All you had to do was jump in front of that. And you didn't. And it's costing you more money again. And we all wonder why the Cowboys flame out within getting to the divisional round.
Yeah, I think since 95 or 96, the only team in the NFC to not go to an NFC championship game in that time. And, of course, this is the dynasty of the 90s. I mean, it's under the same ownership, the whole thing. It's just, I do look at him, like, Parsons is not leaving Dallas,
mm-hmm.
at least at this juncture. He could leave after a second deal, what have you. But at least at this point, he's not going to be traded because they can't come to an agreement. He will get paid. The problem is, as you pointed out, three other guys, two of which were in his position group, got paid before him, got paid to be the highest paid non-quarterback in football, and it just keeps going up and up and up and up. Now, ultimately, and I think Kevin Clark said this when he was on ESPN last week, and I fully agree with him, it's all to keep Dallas in the zeitgeist. They need to be within the media's, earshot. They have to. And Kevin Clark mentioned that if the football gods came down to Jerry, and I'm paraphrasing here, and said, you will win next year's Super Bowl. You'll win like the next three. You just can't do a press conference. Jerry would say no deal. And that's absolutely right. And the reason
Jerry,
why
you're not allowed to talk to the media, and in return, you will win three Super Bowls in a row. He would say no.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that. And it's something like, when we look at the Bills, and to a certain extent, you could sit there and go, it's been boring because all the James Cook stuff never really materialized. And it does seem to be.
I'm happy with boring.
No, right. And because boring often wins. I say it all the time with drafting. Like, usually the less sexy pick is actually probably the right pick, And it's true of free agency, too. You don't want to get involved in the first day or two. You want to wait. Who's available afterwards? Okay, we're going to kind of plug some holes with the free agent signings. We're not going to make swaths as big as a tsunami to try to cover up everything from the team in free agency and make bad deals. But the Cowboys, I mean, like, that's the thing. That's why everyone, I think, always still talks about them. It's just that they are one of those teams that just they refuse to stay out of the media, and that's both good and bad. I mean, they are the brand, right?
They also refuse to stay out of their own way.
Oh, absolutely. That's part of it.
And again, all you had to do is just get things going. Get it done sooner. Why are you having beef with his agent? Like,
I mean, that still makes no sense. He wants to pay him as much money as he does, but it seems he wants to do it like without the agents there, and no player who's been in the league this long will do that. Not a shot. And
outside of Lamar Jackson, who is
but he's
a different case.
But yeah, he's representing himself. If you have your agent, you're not walking to in a room without him.
Exactly.
And to be fair, I think days of not having an agent they're already not very common. I think that's going away because you're gonna have kids out of high school having agents with NIL money and stuff like that. That's going away, and no one's going to walk into those situations like that. It just it is so odd what they're doing, and the comments aren't better. I mean, he wants to get paid, or he has to want to get paid too.
Yeah, that's just he has to want to get paid what we're offering him right now. You know, and that's not enough.
No, and then you even go back to the earlier comments where Jerry couldn't even get the number of games Parsons missed last year correct. He said six. It was actually four. He threw Dak Prescott under the bus with his injuries and then paying him and the guaranteed money. Just you're right. Like they can't get out of their own way, but in part, I think to Kevin Clark's point, they kind of don't want to.
Yeah.
I think in almost a way, and this is not 100%, but I think in almost a way, Jerry's like, I've won my Super Bowls. Now it's time to make the business. And that's not right, but that's how it feels all the time.
Yeah.
Is that I've made my gamble, I won my Super Bowls, now it's about building the brand as much as I can.
And it just, I don't know, man. It's so easy, though, because Cowboys fans are amongst the loudest that there is,
mm-hmm.
because it is such a brand. And no matter what happens, it's always, you know, this is our year. Which I know, Rich coming from Buffalo saying these comments. But there are enough people that would be like, no, let's slow down. In Dallas, there is no such thing because it is about the brand. It is about Jerry. And it's always about Jerry. And it always will be.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating, though, to know that there is a team out there that is willing to slow themselves down in terms of the pursuit of a Lombardi for the owner's ego and how he wants to operate things. No, we aren't going to put any blinds in our stadium, even though our wide receivers can't catch the football in one half of the field.
That feels like such like a 60s thing.
That's
like,
a cartoon villain.
But that's Ferguson also going like, I need the helmets changed from white because everyone in the division is wearing white and I can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. Like it does not seem like it should be a modern problem, but it is. Like,
but that's the thing. Like, ready? The Bills made a change to help a player and help their team. Jerry, that's his shrine. That's Jerry's world. You're asking him to make a change to something?
Yeah.
To the shrine that he built?
Not going to work.
Even though it's construction workers that built it, and you know, he didn't really do much lifting of anything there.
But so people have brought that up over the years, too, and now because the Bills are getting their new stadium, I've seen a lot of people go, have they done their due diligence? Like, due diligence had to have been done with Jerry World, and it just happened to be like, oh, yeah, crap, the sun's going to be setting there. We play a lot of games at 4 o'clock. That's a miss. Because the one big thing was, is there going to be potentially a wind tunnel,
right,
for the Bills Stadium? And I've seen like people on Twitter ask that question, and I've seen people that are working on it going, no, like we have done as much work as possible to figure out everything. Everything is for the brand. I think for the Cowboys and for the Jones family.
Yep.
You're even seeing this too. There's a cheerleaders documentary on Netflix that has season two. It's not even just a miniseries. They have two seasons now worth of it. I've mentioned it because I love sports documentaries. I'm going to watch the one that's The Gambler in America's Team, which is also coming out on Netflix. I believe that's also coming out on Netflix, about the 90s team and all that stuff. It's just – it is weird to kind of like just watch them operate because they do feel like – in the opposite vein of some of these other teams, like Cincinnati, that they're playing an entirely different sport. Because of how they do things. Everything is so internal in Dallas. You know, they really only bring in coaches that have been there for a while or played for the team or have some connection to Jerry.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, remember the Deion Sanders to Dallas stuff. It was because he played and Jerry and Deion love each other.
And yet at the same time, everyone would probably say, yeah, sure, there's a connection there, but there's no way
he's gonna be
that
yes
Deion
man.
Would answer to Jerry for everything there. No, that's a coach that has got a lot of pride to himself.
Yeah.
And
in a way, is almost trying to build up his coaching career.
Right.
But you look at the last three head coaches they've had. Jason Garrett, who is for all intents and purposes the adopted son of Jerry Jones. From everything you've heard, is that like they love each other like a family, the whole thing. That's great. But he played for the team prior. They went on way too long with him being the head coach. Then they go to Mike McCarthy, who almost left in disgrace with Green Bay with how everything ended with him and Aaron Rodgers, the whole thing. He was perceived as not a very good coach by the end, even though early in his career when him and Rodgers won a Super Bowl, he was considered like one of the better young offensive minds out there. And now we're at Brian Schottenheimer, who I don't know a single soul who thinks that's like a legitimate hire. It seems like everyone is sort of just waiting for this to be a tailspin.
Right. And that's
for them to be bad and then for him to get fired after a year.
That's kind of the shame of it. Yeah. Cause like Garrett coaches this team for 10 years.
Too long. I mean, he made it a decade and I don't think anyone thought that should have been the case. And just flat out.
And it's only one that like truly bottom out that you actually even think about that sort of thing. Garrett finally has moved on from like they were a top 10 offense. They had the most yards that year.
Mm-hmm.
But that was also just – it's with Garrett, it was also oftentimes you're good but never good enough.
Yep.
And it was that plateau sort of thing. And then like the occasional bottom out season. And with McCarthy, it was the same thing of like your offenses were humming, but you could never get it all put together.
I mean, you're the only team in the seven seed era to lose to a seven seed.
You're the first and only team to have lost. Yeah.
And it was blown out.
In your own barn, you were blown out, laughed out of your own building. And yeah, but hey, remember that time that he took that one chance and got rid of Jimmy Johnson?
Even that.
He'll remind you of that all the time.
I mean, even getting rid of Jimmy Johnson for Barry Switzer didn't totally work out. Cause it kind of like just burned. They had the team.
They had the team that could have lasted longer.
Yeah, at least a little longer, because obviously you then have the stuff with Irvin and his career kind of ends, and really the Triplets kind of fall off. But yeah, it's just with the last coach he hired that I think really had pushback with him was probably Bill Parcells. And I don't know how long that really – I don't know how
good that – That was 2003.
Yeah, I don't know how good that relationship was ultimately at that point. 803-0550, number to call if you want to jump on the show. Some other NFC East news. Terry McLaurin did show up to Washington camp, though if he's essentially in a hold-in. He's on PUP list for an injury, but every report there is they're nowhere near close on a contract. He's just showing up so he stops getting fined. That makes complete sense. It's why holdouts are not a thing really anymore. I mean, it takes a really bad situation, Trey Hendrickson in Cincinnati – to really go that far, because now most of them are like, I don't really want to get fined, and to kind of help myself and my team in the season, I'll be in camp. I'll just be hanging on the sidelines, on the bike, in meetings, the whole thing.
Teammates respect you being there.
Yep.
Everyone
gets it.
And like also understanding money, and also understanding the business of try to get yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could support both of them when you're there.
Yeah.
Because you're there. And you're right. The hold-in thing is absolutely more commonplace at this point. It avoids you getting fined. And all of a sudden, oh, hey, he's on the physically unable to perform list. We all know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually an ankle injury. It's a problem that they're having that they've had for months now. And though him getting back in the building can help spur negotiations along again, and at the end of the day, he knows like there's still a year of a contract to play out. Now that he's in the building,
mm-hmm.
he knows that he has to go ahead and do that.
We talked about this, I think, a little bit last week or the week prior when it comes to Jaden Daniels, year two.
You want Terry McLaurin in the building.
I got to imagine if Daniels has any pull within that building, and he may after how good his rookie year was and where they were able to go,
mm-hmm.
I got to imagine he's pushing to get this deal done. They have Deebo Samuel and like Luke McCaffrey. Those are the receivers past Terry McLaurin. They are not really well loaded in that room. Even the guy that popped off in the playoffs, De'Ami Brown, is gone.
Right.
So they're not, you know, chock full of receivers and here we go. It seemed like the trade for Deebo Samuel, which by the way was around the combine. I mean, that was very early in the offseason. That seemed more to complement the room they already had. I've got to imagine Daniels is pushing for that. I've got to imagine he is pushing for that. Get the deal done. Get my guy in here. Let's go. Especially, too, and this is maybe more the fan perspective, the NFC East is always so up for grabs. Like the Eagles look dominant in their Super Bowl performance. They were great all year last year.
But they had to fight all year with Washington.
They had to fight all year, but also the NFC East is the NFC East. There's a pretty solid chance the Eagles will have a good year next year. They'll win like 10 games, 11 games, and Washington takes the division. And they're all of a sudden the one or two seed.
Or for some reason, Dallas plays up the potential.
But that doesn't happen if... Look, receivers are not the most important position in football. They are very flashy, but you don't really want to build your team around receivers. You want to build them the lines, quarterback, and then build out from there. But in terms of the development of a second-year quarterback, I mean, that was huge for Josh Allen bringing in John Brown and Cole Beasley, upgrading from what they had already kind of figured out in his rookie year.
And then even upgrading from them the next year.
And then upgrading again. And in part because they had their left tackle already set up for Allen. The offensive line was coming together. They paid a lot of money for Mitch Morris. You know, they were building that offensive line, but they needed to get better and better and better at receiver. And now we've gotten to a point where they feel pretty comfortable in where they're at now, which is let's get a lot of guys who are pretty good and have an MVP quarterback and go from there. And maybe one or two of these guys will break out. I think the hope has been Keon and Dalton Kincaid will become the clear-cut guys going forward. Khalil Shakir's a really nice piece. That's awesome if that happens or has happened. But I think the hope was, based on where they drafted him, Keon and Kincaid will break out. They're part of this forever, and they'll grow with Allen, and everything else will be kind of piecemeal together. We'll grab guys as they go. Palmer, a three-year deal. Ooh, Elijah Moore's available. We'll throw a year in there. Washington wasn't really able to do all that much. They had their guy.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is that McLaurin has been really the mark of consistency for this team. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's one time he doesn't get over 1,000 yards. This is rookie year. And it's 919, so he gets close.
He was still pretty close, wasn't he?
He was pretty close.
Yeah.
His touchdowns have fluctuated, and they absolutely ballooned last year.
And that's where he's trying to get paid. James Cook's the same thing.
But you do have a guy that consistently gets you into the four digits at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
He'll still have a couple of years left on prime capability. He's incredibly healthy. Man has not missed a game in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single game.
No, I mean, you're right. He has been the model of consistency for
model organization. Model of consistency for this organization.
That has had a rough time with that.
That went through hell itself, known as Dan Snyder.
Mm-hmm. And particularly the last few years where it just felt every day was a problem.
Yeah.
It was not a good time.
I can't help but think this is something that just should get done. And whether it does or doesn't, I do think McLaurin ultimately plays.
I do too.
But it's not something that is rocket science here, so to say. He is also, last year was also his most efficient season.
Mm-hmm.
Good quarterback, less missed targets, kind of goes hand in hand. I think there's just it's the argument that I've theorized from the get-go, and I know that you've agreed with me on this. It's term.
I don't want
to go past 4 years, probably, because then that gets McLaurin to his age 33 season, and the Daniels contract will begin its extension after that. And McLaurin would be 34 at that time. You really want to do that? You really want to dance like that with a cap number, even if it's for 1 or 2 years? No. The answer is no.
And yeah, they're in a bad spot, I think, just because it also doesn't help either. McLaurin is very good, not great. I think if McLaurin had like 1,400 yards, had the jump and touchdowns, the whole thing, it'd be an easy one. But for him to kind of just like, this is who he is.
It's
very good. It's going to help McLaurin, or it's going to help Daniels, but are we sure this is going to last into year 31, 32, 33?
Do remember what I said, though, about the quarterbacks that they had.
Right. I don't disagree.
So he's been the model of consistency with bad quarterback play.
Very bad quarterback play.
We are looking at bad quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the model of consistency all throughout that. I don't know. I do think that he is great and that he is held back by things like his rookie season. He had Case Keenum, Colt McCoy started a game.
Oh, well, yeah, I was going to say, change your tone on Colt.
And Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a good quarterback.
No.
And then what do we have after that? Alex Smith, Kyle Allen, Taylor Heinicke, Garrett Gilbert starts a game.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is actually a starter for the team.
Sam Howell for, I think, a full year, right? Howell's our starting quarterback?
Howell was a full year starting quarterback. Carson Wentz and his god-awful track record.
That's right. Carson Wentz got there.
And then a full season of Sam Howell. I do wonder what he would have done with Ryan Fitzpatrick, though. He only got one game. He started that first game, and then he was out for the year.
There was a lot of excitement, I know, here in Buffalo. And then, just the hope of, like, is Fitzpatrick going to finally get in the playoffs? We can actually root for this, too, because it's over in the NFC. Like, that'll be fun.
And then Fitzy showed up in a Bills playoff game shirtless.
That is that year. That is right. That is absolutely right. 803-0550, the number two call. Let's get to a call here before our next timeout. Let's go to John here. John, how are we doing?
Hey, guys, thanks. A couple comments. So if you're in fantasy football, would you rather have Diggs and Hollins or Coleman and Shakir? I'm not thrilled on that trade. I think Diggs healthy. In New England, I think he's got some pretty good weapons. I feel that Buffalo's chance to make it the big run for the big game was 2 years ago. I think we're on a decline. Irrelevant. Other teams are getting better. I think we lost some talent. I'm wondering what you guys think of of New England's wide receivers, Hollins and Diggs.
Yeah, John.
I don't think Shakir is a number one to me on any team. I think he was paid, what, $60 million. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, John. I mean, Shakir's not really their number one. I mean, he's their number one target getter, but he's their slot receiver. They're hoping he's going to be a plus version of Cole Beasley.
I'm going to.
Did he say he was paid $60 million?
I'm going to quote Brandon Bean for words that he said on this very station to help you out with this one. We're not playing fantasy football.
That is correct.
I don't think you should open the premise of this on who would you rather have in fantasy football. Just to help try to gauge things properly at that point.
By the way, Shakir, 4 years, $53 million.
Diggs got 60.
Yes.
That's what it was. You don't need to open a question with that because I feel like it limits what you are capable of putting the argument for in that case. And look, man, I get it. They haven't won and they probably had blown their best opportunities too. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend like they're on a decline here.
I don't really know what talent they've lost. Matt Collins didn't have 400 yards last year.
Yeah.
He's a fine number four receiver that happened to be their only deep threat guy.
He led the team in touchdowns with five.
Five, which is a career high for him.
You're frustrated about the past opportunities and how they've, made their mistakes and blown those opportunities. Let's not pretend like they're on a decline, though. They're not.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. John, thanks for the call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here until 12 o'clock. This is WGR.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.